everybody. Nico Redos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask PD show. And you are not alone if you are feeling so out of sorts. And of course, the very best thing that we can do if we're feeling depressed and anxious and just not really feeling on our game is to give ourselves permission and express our feelings, and not necessarily to a therapist, but to people in your life, your friends, your family, because it is not in our best interest to keep all of these feelings inside. When you really think about what has been going on in the last number of months, I can't believe that I haven't seen a live patient since this whole COVID-19 situation began. My entire practice, my practice here in New York City and also in East Hampton, is on Zoom, and it's certainly been a way to stay connected to all of the different people that I treat. But I miss seeing people. I miss seeing people having them come to my office. And of course, we're all going through so many different kinds of changes. The concerns about our businesses, our jobs, the social isolation. There are so many parents who have children, and the issue of homeschooling. And I was saying to a friend just yesterday, for parents who actually have to go out of their homes and their apartments and go to work, and they have children who are now supposedly having to be homeschooled. I mean, it is incredibly stressful financially and emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically. And the American Medical Association, they are reporting that depression, true clinical depression rates are really up. In fact, statistics now are 30% of Americans are suffering from various different levels of depression. 52% of us are now working from home or working remotely. And most people that I talk to are feeling more anxious. And Americans, and hopefully that's going to change, and I'm going to be able to convince you to do things that are really in your best interest. But Americans are doubling down on some of their worst habits to cope with emotional stress related to the virus. Statistics tell us that alcohol sales have jumped, with spirits up 75%, wine up 66%, beer 42%. Cannabis apparently has reached an all-time high in March, even though medical experts, now please listen to what the medical experts are telling us, that marijuana and vaping and tobacco may actually increase the risk of the virus. And now that the weather is getting a little colder, at least here in New York and in the Northeast, people are definitely exercising less and eating more. And there are real concerns that there may be long-term effects of post-traumatic stress disorder and depression and anxiety as a result of all of the different changes that we are having to find ways to really adjust to. And yet, with all of this, you know, I was a speaker a couple of days ago at the Wellness Center of New York. Dr. Craig Pichel, who is a chiropractor, interviewed me on what we can all do to improve our emotional well-being and our emotional health, given the reality of what's going on. And, you know, here is really a good example. People can wake up. We can all wake up and we can say, oh my goodness, it is going to be a terrible, terrible day. And guess what happens? Well, it can become, and probably will become, a self-fulfilling prophecy. So rather than starting our days in this kind of a negative way, even though even though we may wake up and we are not necessarily looking forward to the ins and outs of what we're going to have to do in a particular day, would it not make more sense to say, look, I have a choice? I can talk about how this is going to be a terrible, terrible day, and it probably will end up being a terrible, terrible day, or I can decide. I have the power to decide about the things that I can actually do today to improve the probability of today. Because we can't do anything about yesterday. We can't certainly do anything about tomorrow. But what we can do is we can make decisions every day, including today, what we can do, the mindset that we can have, the behaviors that we can actually take on to make today well. And of course, Dr. Gary Null, he reminds us every single day of positive things that we can do to improve the quality of our lives and the quality of our relationships, which of course begins with a plant-based diet and fruits, vegetables, and grains, and that us try to completely eliminate, if possible, the sugars and the high cholesterol and high fat foods, and it can make all the difference in the world. And for example, people in Sardinia, I don't know whether you know this or not, I certainly didn't until I did the research, they happen to live the longest. So when people are doing things well, I am always curious about what exactly do they know and what exactly are they doing to live really good and healthy lives. Well, they do eat healthily, they interact, and they socialize, and they sleep 8 hours a night, and they also take naps. Well, for many of us, we're not able to take naps in the middle of the afternoon, but we certainly can. We can eat better, and we can do whatever it is that we need to do. Now it's on Zoom and on Skype and on the phone to interact and socialize so that we are going to avoid the really negative effects of social isolation. And there are a lot of other things that we can do. And Dr. Fischel was asking, he says, how do you begin your day's meeting? Well, Jim's in my bedroom, believe it or not, I have weights. I have free weights. I have my light for seasonal affective disorder. I am one of these people that I need sunshine. I need sunshine 12 months of the year. So here in New York, it can get a little dark. So I start off my day by my weight training, and then I turn on my lights, and I do a number of really positive things, including talking to my husband before my day really begins. And I have to tell you, it really does make a difference. And of course, having supportive people in our lives. And for those of you who've been listening to the Ask Beattie Show, in fact, I can hardly believe it, but today is the 331st Ask Beattie Show here on the Progressive Radio Network. So I talk a lot about the importance of having supportive people in our life. And I also talk a lot about the importance of eliminating toxins. And when Gary Null talks about toxins, he usually refers to chemical toxins. And I talk about chemical toxins too, but I talk a lot about the importance of eliminating toxic people from our lives. And that sometimes, and for many people, it often times includes friends and family, because you know this as well as I do. If we allow the toxicity in our lives, it can literally kill us. So what are some of the other things that we can do every single day? It doesn't cost any money. We have complete control over positive visualization. You know, we have a choice. We can visualize negativity, or we can also visualize positive massive, beautiful, lovely things, nature, the sky, the trees, music, that can really help us to feel so, so much better. And I love to dance, and I love listening to Broadway music, and it's pretty, pretty hard to feel depressed and anxious and down when you are listening and to maybe even dancing to uplifting music. Some people really like to calm down with herbal teas. I've never, for example, been a tea drinker, but people tell me that it really does, that it makes a difference, and it's a good way to calm down in the middle of the day. Aromatherapy, essential oils, journaling. You know, if you don't have somebody today that you can actually talk to about some of your fears and some of your worries and some of your anxieties, what a great way to take some time, because this is certainly in your best interest, and journal and express your feelings. And you can revisit your journal, and hopefully in a few days or in a few months, you're going to look back and you're going to be able to say, you know, I've made a lot of positive changes in my life, and I am feeling a lot better just about almost everything about my work. I've decided to look into a new kind of work, perhaps, or maybe even to take some courses or classes. And the studies show, and I've been somebody who's had a dog for most of my life, but getting a dog, I mean, we love to be able to take Cha-Cha, our little dog, who also happens to be a therapy dog, who has not had much therapy to do in the last number of months. But it's great company, and you don't have to feel so alone. And of course, it's a wonderful, wonderful way to meet people and socialize, and we're having to take our pets on walks on a regular basis. And again, the reminder again about the importance of eliminating sugar and soda and alcohol and nicotine. And prior to, for those of you who have been listening to my show for all these years, you've heard me say on numerous, numerous occasions to minimize the social media, to minimize being on your cell phone and computers. Well, given the reality of everything that we are having to deal with, I take that back. Well, certainly not before you're going to go to bed, but the social media has really made a huge, huge difference, a positive difference in people's lives. I belong to a couple of women's organizations here in New York City. And of course, I haven't seen any of my friends or my colleagues since March. And it's really been great to be able to connect on Zoom and on various other social media outlets. We also have to remember to remind ourselves to find a balance between work and fun. We have to make a concerted effort to make sure, you know, so many people that I am treating, and I'm treating a number of young women in their late 20s, who have very significant and very responsible jobs. And they tell me that they're working anywhere between 10 and 12 hours a day. It's like, you have got to be kidding. And they're not sleeping sufficiently. They're not exercising. So again, the perfect balance definitely, definitely does not exist. But we at least have to strive to make sure that we are doing the things that are really constructive for us. And there are a couple of studies, and I'm going to go through them with you next week, because I have a very, very special guest who I'm going to be introducing you to in a couple of minutes. But in the New York Times, there was a headline, Weight Training as an Antidote for Anxiety. And the study actually, which involved healthy young adults, barbells and lunges, indicate that regular weight training substantially, substantially reduces anxiety, a finding with particular relevance during these unsettling bumpy times. And I'm going to go through the study, the results of the study with you in depth next week. And there was another study that came out very, very recently, and a longitudinal study that finds that lack of physical fitness is linked to heightened risk of mental disorders. So the importance of exercise cannot be minimized at all. I promised that I was going to give you an update on last week's show. Now, for those of you who listened to this very, very riveting show last week, my guest was private investigator Manuel Gomez. And if you recall, private investigator Manuel Gomez is representing, and let's call her Ashley, who was allegedly, of course, I have to use the word allegedly, although I interviewed Ashley and had absolutely no concerns at all that everything that she was saying was absolutely true. But let's just say allegedly was sexually abused by the Reverend George William Rutler of St. Michael's Church here in New York City. And when we were talking with Manuel Gomez, he was pretty confident that within a couple of days, this was after last week's show, that the priest, Reverend George William Rutler, was going to be arrested. Well, that has not happened up to this date. Not surprisingly, of course, you know, when you're in the field as long as I've been in the field, Ashley's security company that she works for, MG Security, did everything possible to discourage her from reporting this to the police. And apparently, according to Manuel Gomez, who I spoke with last week, the police also have not up to this point been cooperative. So the case is obviously going to be moving forward. And I was hoping to be able to talk to Manuel Gomez on the Ask Beatty show today just to get a daily update. But I will definitely keep you posted. And why is there such reluctance? Well, the Reverend George William Rutler of St. Michael's Church is a big name in the Catholic world, around the world. But with Manuel Gomez overseeing this process, I can assure you that something positive for Ashley is actually going to come about. Well, let's move on to something else that is really positive, and that is my guest, my 90-year-old psychotherapist guest, Charlotte Krasnoff. So welcome, Charlotte, to the Ask Beatty Show.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
I am thrilled. I'm actually thrilled that we're going to be doing this together. Well, I want my audience to know a little bit about you before we start to chat. Charlotte was actually born during the Great Depression in 1930 in Ventnor, New Jersey. She graduated from the University of Pennsylvania in 1953 with both a BS and a Master's of Education. In 1965, she received her MSW, that's a Master's Degree in Clinical Social Work, from the University of Denver. And in 2004, Charlotte was named Social Worker of the Year for the state of Colorado. I mean, that is pretty darn impressive. And her decades of life, when you think about it, have spanned Franklin Roosevelt to the present day. And she recalls World War II, the Cold War, Sputnik, above-ground atomic testing, the Vietnam War, the Civil Rights Movement, Martin Luther King, and she has experienced marriage, divorce, remarriage, and widowhood. And today, Charlotte is drawn to exploring the meaning of life and zooming with friends. And you know, I think it's so important, Charlotte, that we have so much to learn from people like yourself. And I'm just so thrilled that we are going to have a really good discussion about all the things, or at least some of the things that you have actually learned throughout your life. And as a social worker, since we're both social workers, I'm so curious, what was it like in the 50s to be a social worker?
It was exciting. It was very exciting because I had the opportunity to develop any kind of programs that I wanted, and could reach out to underserved groups, develop new programs of education, get involved in with schools, with police, with public health. It was just a wonderful, wonderful time. It was the golden age of mental health, and I loved it.
Well, tell me, was it mostly a female-oriented caregiving field at that time?
I don't think so, no. Not. I think people think of social service as being all female. But when I began to work at the Boulder Mental Health Center, at that time, I was number 7 on the staff, and of the other 6, I think 4 were men and 2 were women when I joined them. And it was sort of equal. Psychiatrists were the main people who were working in the field of mental health at that time, but they had just found psychotropic drugs, and that had allowed people to return to their communities. And so that began the development of the community mental health centers. And so I was part of that early movement, and helped to take a look at what can we do to make this world a better world for people who, rather than locking them away. And of course, inevitably, it means education of everyone in the family, as well as teachers, as well as other social service workers of various kinds. And it was just very, very exciting.
Well, you know, you say that there were so many amazing things that were really going on at that time. Do you feel that we are actually in a better place today in the field than we were in the 50s and in the 60s and in previous, really previous generations?
Do I think that this is a better time?
Yes, in mental health.
I think so. I think so because there are broader understandings. We're learning new things all the time. At this point, learning about the brain is the one of the most important areas that we're delving into. But I think we're also my area has also always been community education as well, and so looking at ways that we can help the total populations, and these are what's needed. This is what's needed by the world today because we're in such a place of upheaval. And so I think we might have much broader views than just simply sitting with people and on a one-to-one and helping them with their individual problems. We can also say, what can we do to make the community we live in a better community? What can we do to make the world a better world?
Mm-hmm.
And people are working at all levels.
Which is so, so very important because, you know, so many psychotherapists and mental health people, as you say, it's just on a, you know, on a one-to-one kind of a basis without giving really much thought to what should we be doing and what can we be doing to improve the quality of our community and the quality of our society, also politically. But you're 90 years old, which, I mean, we haven't met yet. Of course, you know Jim, my husband, very well and have for many, many years. You're practicing, and I'm really so curious to hear about the kinds of people that you're treating and how often you are working because you sound amazing. So I'm just curious how at 90, and I'm hoping that at 90, I'm going to be doing exactly the same kinds of things that you are. So who do you treat? Who are your clients?
Well, I'm technically retired, and I only see a handful of people, and mostly I work with Well, people today are upset about the COVID. They're upset about the politics. And so this is a presenting problem that one gets. In the past, I also was trained as a group therapist. My original work was as a group worker, and that has some interesting things that have happened to me because of that. But I still have a group that I've had for 40 years with people coming and going, and there are a few people in there. It's very small today, but we still work with each other by presenting their personal problems. They get not just one person's point of view, but they get the whole group's point of view. And we become very close, like extended family almost, because in the group of people we've gone through marriages, divorces, births, deaths, children being born, loss of jobs, I mean, you name it, change of profession. So we've seen everything. And the more you know about a person, the more you can really understand them. So I find, to me, the most exciting thing and most interesting thing I love is group work. But at the same time, I love going into solving what I call the riddle of someone's life, putting together the puzzle pieces and understanding how this came about and why did it happen and so forth. So this is just a little vignette because it was my community work as a community outreach director that I was able to touch the most people in the past, and that's sort of the past for me now.
What did you do, Charlotte, when you were doing a lot of community work? What did it look like?
Well, I had a whole team that worked under me. We had one person. At that time, drugs were rampant in the university area, and we had a psychologist who was assigned to that area. He himself had been using drugs and knew them well. And he had a newsletter that he would put out what were the dangerous things for people to have and what were activities they could get involved with and how could they be drawn into the getting some psychological help. And so he was there working with the people individually. I had somebody else a young man who was concerned about school dropouts. And so he helped to develop a committee that started an alternative school, which still exists to this day, 40 years later. And that was very exciting to have another alternative to the traditional schools, which fit the needs of some but not all. I myself had a real interest in learning disabilities, which was a new area at that time. And so I developed a ongoing community group for parents where they could come and talk about problems they were having, began helping teachers understand what was going on with their kids. At that time, when I worked at a mental health center, we had a classroom in our mental health center of the most disturbed kids in our county, and I would do therapy with each of them individually. And we had a teacher who was from the school system who would be teaching them as well. I had someone who worked with the welfare department with welfare women, trying to help them cope with the difficulties in their lives. Let me see, what else? I just went from I started a volunteer system within the mental health center. It had first started by someone else in the community at the university, and I thought it was so wonderful. I thought, well, I can do that here. And so I developed a volunteer system where we drew people in and then eventually hired someone as a volunteer coordinator. And then I developed a citywide volunteer center that still exists, where people can either ask for help, or they can have programs that they want to have volunteers to fill, and that's, as I said, gone on for 40 years. We developed the first rape team in the community. I remembered that I had a flyer that I put out all over the community, and I never did these things alone. I always had committees that I would work with as well, because the more people you involve, the richer the program. Anyhow, this was a program, and we left flyers at like the YWCA and places like that to fill out if women had been inappropriately approached by people with whom they had a fiduciary relationship, whether it was a doctor, a massage therapist, a therapist, it could have been anyone in a lawyer. And so many women responded to it. It was really, really overwhelmingly touching. And people thanked us for letting them tell their stories because many of them had held the problems that they had dealt with within themselves for years and years and years. Anyhow, those are just a few of the things. And you just went from one thing to another because there's always, you look for unmet needs and say, what can we do about this? How can we do it? So that's exactly. Just a little idea of what was.
One of the many things that really impresses me about you is that you're so engaged. I mean, whatever 90 is supposed to sound like, I mean, you sound so wonderful, so alive, so engaged in life. And of course, I see in my practices, you know, people in their 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s who basically given up on life, and not because of the pandemic, just because they have not been able to find a place to feel joy, to feel love, to feel connection. And, you know, there's so many lessons that we can learn from our elders. And I'm just curious. I mean, you've been through a lot. You've been through marriage. You've been through divorce. You've been through widowhood. You know, you're now single. I mean, what have you managed to do to keep yourself sounding just so alive and so engaged with life?
Well, I think you're answering it. It's being engaged with life, being interested always. There's always something to learn, and you keep on learning for the rest of your life. And so just being interested in the world and interested in people and having connections with others, I think all of that is what makes life broad and rich and worthwhile.
What to do? I mean, this is one of the things that I try to do, you know, with everybody, is to find ways to motivate people to not give up, to try different things. And of course, I'm sure what you found and I found as well is that giving back to others. You know, I oftentimes think that I probably have gotten as much, if not more, from giving back to people as I have in, you know, in providing people with counseling over the years. But I mean, in Colorado, and the people that you know and the people that you see, are you finding that there is just so much depression and so much angst and so much anxiety as I am finding here in New York, and not just with people that I treat, with colleagues and with friends as well? I mean, do you think that maybe being in Colorado, which is a better place and a more uplifting place than being here in New York? Of course, here in New York, we're in the center of the pandemic.
Well, right now we have a rising number of cases, and I do think there's a great deal of what you said. Although the difference here is we have sunshine more than the state of Florida or California. And so the sun is shining, and even if we have a dreary day or two, the sun always shines. And so that makes you much happier automatically. But yesterday, I had a friend call me yesterday who used to be a social service person, and she called and she said, I don't know, I'm afraid I'm depressed, and that's why I haven't talked to you for a while. And she was saying, the next thing she told me was that she had had this dream that had upset her the night before. And I said, well, tell me about it. And she said, well, in the dream, she was at work. And for some reason, she was very upset. And it turned out that her supervisor was Donald Trump.
That would make anybody very, very upset, to say the least.
She went on strike in her dream is what she did. Anyhow, so we talked about the fact that she feels thwarted because she feels like she can't do anything about the situation. And I think one of this is a very important issue. One, she actually is. She's part of a letter writing group. They're writing to people who have never really been active and involved in politics, and so they're trying to get people involved in voting. And she's a person in her 70s, and I said, well, this is something you're doing, and that's terrific, because it's by doing that, you know, that helps you feel more comfortable. But I feel like one of the things you have to do is really be very positive, and there's always positiveness in the world. And so I have a little practice that I'll share with you if you're interested. And this was researched, actually.
Absolutely.
And I have a niece who actually works in a state hospital in upstate New York with people who are mentally ill. And they did this study was done, at any rate, on people who were depressed and anxious. And a year later, they were studied again, and they found that the people who did this practice were way ahead of the others. So, and I do this every night before I go to bed, or while I'm lying in bed, waiting to fall
asleep. Let's hear.
And you imagine a rose, a one-stem rose, and on the end of the rose, there are three full blooms, there are two buds, and there is one thorn. And you look at each main rose, main blossom, and you say something that you are grateful for that has happened within the last 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it can beautiful. Be something, it can be something gigantic, or it can be something that seems very innocuous. But I mean, like, I'm very happy that the sun is shining today because it got cold yesterday. And so it's nice to see the return of the sunshine again. And it makes me feel positive. You can be grateful. I can be grateful that tonight I can say that I'm grateful because I had this experience. It's a brand new experience for me being on the radio. I've never done it before.
Really? This is your first time?
Yeah, I've never been on the radio. I've been interviewed before, but I've never been on the radio.
Well, you're a pro.
I don't
you're
know about
seasoned.
That. But anyhow, so you have three things you're appreciative of. Then the two buds are two kindnesses that have been done to you this in the last 24 hours. And it might be that somebody, it could be that somebody gave you their place in line when you were waiting for the COVID test. I don't know. It could be somebody smiled at you when you were walking outside and it made you feel good. It doesn't have to, you know, it's something kind that has happened. Or, like, for instance, yesterday somebody offered to share turkey dinner with me on Thanksgiving and bring me over some Thanksgiving dinner.
That's beautiful.
That's kindness.
Very, very much so. So
yes.
Those
and
are
then
the
third
two things.
Thing,
oh, what is the third thing?
The third thing is the one sticker that's there. And you say, what is one mistake I made in the last 24 hours? And how can I rectify it? What did I learn from it, and how can I rectify it? And sometimes it's that I wasn't outside enough, and I needed to have more fresh air.
Uh-huh.
And
so the three things, that's just, and I'm actually writing this down, Charlotte, as you're talking. So the first thing is looking at the roses and to express to yourself and out loud what you're grateful for. The second thing is to think about something nice or hopefully a few things that were nice that happened to you during the day.
And kindnesses
the third thing
that were to you.
Maybe less a mistake that I made. And of course, I would frame it lessons to be learned.
And I'm sorry, I missed what you said.
Lessons to be learned. You know, you talked about maybe a mistake that you made, which was not perhaps going out or not exercising or not returning a phone call. And, you know, I would coin that lessons to be learned that we, you know, that we will either not repeat or that we will repeat the next day.
Right. What did I learn? So I don't keep repeating things. And I find that really keeps me in balance. It keeps you positive. It makes you realize the world is still a wonderful place, even if we have all this craziness going on politically that can drive you to drink.
Right.
Which apparently it is with a lot of people.
Yes.
And with the COVID and being restricted and people losing jobs and all the rest of it, nonetheless, there's much beauty in this world. And people are good. And just recognizing and you said something in your introduction, which is what I believe, you don't look at the past and have regrets about the past, the would-haves and the should-haves and why didn't I. You can't undo that. You're not helping anybody by being scared of the future. or worrying. It doesn't solve anything. The only thing we have is today. And what do they say? That the past is history, the future is a mystery, and all we have is the present, which is a gift.
No, I love that. In fact, I wrote that down also when we spoke last week, and that really helped. I think it really helped to center me, because at times I will worry about the future. And of course, there is absolutely nothing we can do about the future. There is nothing we can do about our history. And that it's true that all we really have is today. You know, the piece that I actually sent you, which is 103 Lessons People Often Learn Too Late in Life, and this was written by Thomas Opong. I think I'm pronouncing his name correctly. You know, and he says that most people, and it's really true, operate on autopilot, doing the same thing today that didn't work yesterday. And they are caught in a cycle. And how important it is, you know, as you were saying, to be able to look at what is working for us and what is not working for us, and making some really concrete decisions to, again, do things that are really in our best interest, and to be mindful of what is constructive as compared to what is self-destructive and what is destructive. That's hard for a lot of people to do on their own, don't you think?
Oh, I definitely think so. And that's when you need some professional help sometimes. So by all means, but people can begin to look at themselves honestly. And that's really the job of maturity, to begin to say, you know, what's been successful for me, and how can I do more of that, and what hasn't worked, and what's another alternative I can take. I think it's really important to be able to always self-examine, and it's through that we grow and we mature.
Exactly. You know, something else in this piece that I really loved, there was a sentence, how you spend your time is how you spend your life.
Yes. Yes. That's a pretty rich statement. It really is.
And it sounds like how you've been spending your time is exactly how you've been spending your life. I mean, it is so enriched. It was so enriched. You've given so much to, I'm sure, thousands and thousands of people, which has brought you, I mean, obviously, so much joy. I mean, you can hear it in your voice.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying that. I think it's very important to find some kind of, I hesitate to say the word work when people are not allowed to work, or, you know, some people have lost jobs and so forth, but to find some kind of endeavor, whether it's volunteer or with your family or with your community, but to find something where you are part of it and you give and you see a problem and you work on what can I contribute? How can I make this better? And so
exactly, which helps you to really stop being so self-absorbed. And, you know, as research has really taught us, it's in the giving and in the doing and in the helping for others that we get so much back. You know, there was another little line here in this 103 Lessons That People Learn Too Late in Life, that discovering your own reasons for living, what the Japanese happen to call aikidai, can bring you fulfillment, happiness, and make you live longer. Your own reasons for living. And I think that we're so busy running around in our lives that people barely seem to take the time, perhaps only when there is a crisis, to actually sit down and contemplate some of what we're talking about right now. Have you found that to be the case as well?
Yes. Well, I also think that you need time off, which is one thing that the COVID has done, which is good, but also getting older, that one of the goals of what I call the last chapter of life is to look at what is the meaning of my life. Where have I been, and what have I done, and how meaningful is it? And is this what I, you know, is there something I want to still do? And if so, how can I make it happen? And I always like inspirational things and to help me with all of these. And so one of them that I always had on my wall in my office is by Hillel, who was a famous rabbi in 1200. And this is a very famous saying, the last part many people will recognize. If I am not for myself, who will be? If I'm only for myself, what am I? If not now, when? And, of course, mm-hmm. the civil rights movement used that last sentence. If not now, when? And so that's been one of the inspirational things that I've always looked to and that I've always taught others that I think is very helpful. Mm-hmm. And another thing that has always, that I think today has even more meaningfulness to me than it did in the past, I've always loved the Serenity Prayer that many people know from Alcoholics Anonymous.
Right.
And I have a copy of that, and I read it over just yesterday because I was going to be coming on the show, and I thought, wow, it really says a lot, because it says, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. And that is so fitting for today. That is so meaningful.
Absolutely. And I think that people, what I have found, and I'm curious what you have found, is that in my experience, in my life experience, in my experience as a psychotherapist, you know, I oftentimes joke, nobody ever calls and says, listen, BD, I need help with communication or problem solving, or I need help to really look into myself. It seems, at least in my own life experience, that there is always a crisis. And I have looked at crisis as being real opportunity, and at times the best possible times and opportunities for people to really look within, as you're suggesting. And we get so caught up in work and all kinds of other things that we don't take the opportunity to do this very, very important kind of work on ourselves. And before we know it, we're in our 60s and 70s and 80s, and life has just kind of passed us by.
That's very true. That's very true. And that's why I say that's one of the things when you can take time off just to look at yourself and understand yourself. Self-awareness is one of the most important things there is in life, is really being able to understand and then being true to yourself with what you've come up with. I think it's the one of the things I always have said to people is that when you're a kid, you just absorb the values and the ideas of your parents and your preachers and your teachers. But one of the tasks of growing up is to take the things you've been taught and to evaluate them and say, these things which I was taught by the leaders in my past, I accept totally, and I will keep them, and I will use them as a foundation in my life. But these things that they taught me, I don't want any part of, and I will not practice them. Mm-hmm. And then there's the third part that they have to sift through for the rest of your lives, probably saying, well, I'm not sure. Do I want to keep this, or don't I want to keep it? What part of it is true for me, and what part is not? And always asking questions all the time, constantly asking questions and learning. Put these things all together, and that keeps you alive and well and helps you mature as a human being and helps you be part of an engaged human being.
Well, if anybody sounds like an engaged human being, it certainly is you. And have you always had this kind of mindset, or was it something that evolved, something that developed as you were getting older?
I think it would. I had a little spark of it my whole life, probably. Uh-huh. I admired my father tremendously, and he was a very positive thinking person. And believed in, and I mean, that was his philosophy, to always come forth with the positive. and look for the good in people and help them develop their self-esteem. And he developed his own little business college in Atlantic City. He had graduated, and we were an immigrant family, but because he was the youngest in the family, he wasn't able to go to college, even though he had to work his way through, but he was able to do that, and he had a degree in accounting. But he took that, and he developed a little business college, which was just excellent. And he was such a dynamic person, and he was a father figure to all of his students. And so I saw that. And when I was in high school, I'm going to get to food, because food is an important thing in life.
Right.
When I was in high school, the food, we had a rule. We had to eat in the cafeteria, and the cafeteria was dreadful food, and the trays were always kind of wet. They'd been washed, and they hadn't been dried, and it was awful. So I started a cafeteria strike.
Leave it to you.
And it was so, that was probably my first big project, and it was on the first page of the newspaper, because the kids, we weren't allowed off campus. We had to eat the food there, and people began to bring their lunch who had never done it before, and it hit the front page of the paper. So that was the first time I ever had a little project.
And you were an activist long before probably you even knew what the word activist was.
Right. And it just sort of came naturally to me. So throughout my life, I did these kinds of things. And when I first started teaching, because I was a teacher before I became a therapist, I was constantly getting in trouble with the principal because I was doing outlandish things. Like, I was working in the poorest school in Denver, and these kids were from the projects, and they had never been to the mountains, and we live like an hour away from the mountains. So I decided they should go. And so I sent out notices to the parents that asked who had a car, because not everybody did back then.
Right.
And I got together a group of people with a car, and we took the kids in my class, and we all went up to the mountains, and I knew some places to go that were fun for them, and we had a wonderful day. And, of course, I got in trouble when I came back because I hadn't done it through the principal, and you're not allowed to do that.
Right.
And one of the kids, the permission slip had blown away, and the principal found it. And then I did a terrible thing. It was the first time I was ever going to vote, and I had to vote long distance because I had just moved to Colorado and I was from New Jersey. And I said, we had to stay in school till 5 o'clock. We weren't allowed to leave before then. And I said, I'd like permission to walk to the little post office, which was 5 blocks away, and just deposit my vote and then come back. And she said, you can't do that. Against the rules. And I said, I know, but I just really want to vote. It's my first time, and this is important to me. And she said, well, you can't. And I said, she doesn't have a right to tell me not to do that. So I marched over to the office, and I mailed my ballot, and then I came back immediately. I was always doing things that were not within the guidelines, so to speak. But I loved the kids.
You challenged a system or systems that needed to be challenged. And somehow, as a little girl, and maybe your father was really instrumental in developing this part of you. And it's really interesting because my father was also very instrumental in probably most parts of my life. And we learned to challenge the systems early on, which is all good. It may not have been easy, but it was certainly the right thing to do. You know, Charlotte, I'm looking at the clock here. I mean, I could continue to talk to you for hours, and I just want you to know that you are such an incredible inspiration for all of us. And I want to thank you. I want to thank you so much for taking the time, and you and I hopefully are going to have a lot of conversations, you know, on air, off air, because I just think you're an incredible woman. And I hope when I'm 90, I have your joie and your wisdom and your engagement in life in the way that you do. So again, thank you so much, and we'll be in touch very soon. And I will send you, will email you the link to the SB show today so that you'll be able to keep it in your archives.
Oh, thank you. And thanks so much for giving me the opportunity. I really appreciate what you're doing.
You were wonderful. You were absolutely wonderful. Well, everybody, you know, who is to ever believe that it is all about youth and that youth should be the center of our world? You know, here you have a woman, 90 years old, so bright, so loving, so engaged, so excited, so positive. And, you know, I'm hoping that we can all take away something from this conversation, because it's true. How we spend our time is how we spend our life, and discovering our own reasons for living, you know, can bring us all fulfillment and happiness and make us live longer. And of course, it is much more about not just the bigger and the better and the more and the money. It is about really the essence of trying to figure out how can we become the best possible human beings, and how can we give to our fellow man and to our societies politically and socially, so that we can really contribute to having a much, much better personal life and a much, much better society. So everybody, another hour on the Ask Beauty Show is come and gone. And I want to thank you all again for listening. I will keep you updated about the investigation, the Manuel Gomez investigation. And I end the show with my most favorite song, which is What the World Needs Now is Love, Sweet Love. And of course, we need to do everything possible, as Charlotte has suggested, to make sure that we're doing things that are in our best interest, to love ourselves. And we certainly need to be doing a much, much better job to ensure that we are loving our fellow man much more than we have done in certainly in recent years. And I wish you all a very, very, very happy and restful Thanksgiving. And I will talk with you next week. So goodbye, everybody. Have a good rest of the day. Be good to yourself and be good to others. Bye-bye.